This weekend starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
An expensive holiday weekend. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your Memorial Day weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
As we prepare for Memorial Day weekend with fewer pandemic restrictions, the three-day period is colliding with soaring travel prices.
On the health front, a bizarre treatment for Lyme disease.
The Washington, D.C. woman who visits Arlington National Cemetery on behalf of strangers.
And many of us started baking during lockdowns, right? Now food companies are desperate to make sure we stay engaged.
Millions of people, new bakers, hunted online for recipes. And basically this surge reversed years of slow sales in the baking aisle. According to a January survey by one market researcher, nearly one-third of U.S. adults said that they're baking more often this year than last year.
Ellen Byron at the Wall Street Journal on whether baking is just a flash in the pan, so to speak. Well, President Biden wants the U.S. to return to a sense of normalcy by July 4th. But the prices many Americans are seeing this holiday weekend are anything but normal. A roundup from Alex Gangitano, reporter at The Hill. Alex, what do we have?
Yeah, Memorial Day this year is right when, you know, things are opening up and people, I think, are eager to get traveling again, even flying again, if they've been kind of car bound this whole time during the pandemic. But the cost of airfares, car rentals, even Airbnb bookings have all gone up. So a couple of top line numbers I heard, daily car rental rates have doubled compared to this time last year. The average airfare has increased by 14%, and mid-range hotels have increased up to 34%. So it's not cheap to travel this year, and that's also not great news for the travel industry, which was hoping that everybody would, you know, be eager and wanting to travel again by this time.
Yeah, just with regards to rental cars, that story has continued to amaze me. I get supply and demand and how everybody wants and needs a car for this summer, but the lack of availability is just stunning, right? I mean, you saw that story about people renting U-Hauls to get around in Hawaii. Like,
yeah,
it's insane. What other numbers are you hearing? What else stood out?
Well, on the rental car note, of course, gas prices. Ever since the Colonial Pipeline hack, gas prices are at their highest levels since we've seen since 2014. So the average cost of a gallon is $1.12, more expensive than Memorial Day 2020. Of course, Memorial Day 2020 was, you know, the peak of the pandemic. Everything was shut down. People were staying home. But yeah, gas prices are on the rise. And then what's interesting, though, is that the hotel industry has still said that they are not back to pandemic levels. And so from talking to them, they claim that they're still down in prices about 15% compared to 2019. So pre-pandemic. Well, Airbnbs are doing really well. So who knows, maybe people are still kind of weary of staying in a hotel, being around other people, you know, you're sharing the elevator, and that's why people are more likely to stay in an Airbnb.
We're speaking with Alex Gangitano, reporter at The Hill. Her story is called Memorial Day Weekend Collides with Surging Travel Costs. So you referenced Colonial Pipeline, and now we're like kind of hearing the politics weave into that in terms of oil and gas prices. Explain.
Exactly. So there was an interesting email out from House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, who used the Colonial Pipeline hack from, I guess that was 2 weeks ago now, to kind of expose what he claims were the flaws of Biden's approach to energy policy. So basically, he's saying that this attack made it clear that the pipelines and energy development in the U.S. Are good for the economy, make it more resilient, and President Biden and Democrats should not work to scale those things back. So he's it was interesting, this statement that he put out, he really marked it as gas prices are high and it's President Biden's fault. And this was his explanation for that. But yeah, we're seeing a lot of politicizing of, you know, you see the price at the pump and who do you blame for that?
Right. Circle back to travel here and crossings of, say, the Canada-Mexico border, European travelers. How do we summarize that?
Yep. So there's been a lot of pressure on the Biden administration also to allow European residents to resume regular travel, you know, just leisure travel to the U.S. So that's been restricted, you know, over a year now. The Canadian and Mexican borders are going to open up June 21st. That was an extension by a bit. So we've heard, you know, the Secretary of Homeland Security, we've heard the Transportation Secretary, they've all been questioned about this on when are European residents going to be able to come into the U.S. And it seems like the administration's still kind of pushing back on it, saying, we're not ready yet, we're going to, this is a really a health decision, you know, kind of punting it to the CDC. So I don't know when it's, you know, don't hold your breath on when European residents will be back in the U.S. because it does seem like it's going to be a little while.
Thanks, Alex. Alex Gangitano, reporter at The Hill. Coming up next, a strange treatment for Lyme disease. It's the perfect season for a powerful business upgrade with Dell Technologies summer sale event. Save up to 45% on secure PCs built for business with Windows 10 Pro. You'll also find great savings on Dell servers, monitors, docks, and other accessories to help boost productivity. Plus, enjoy free shipping on everything. Do more with modern devices and Windows 10 Pro. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL for business specials during Dell's summer sale event. Thanks for spending part of your holiday weekend with us. This could be a record year for Lyme disease. WebMD reports that not only are Lyme disease-carrying ticks in the typical wooded, grassy areas, but now they're also popping up at the beach. With the basics of Lyme disease and her story of how she found treatment, we're joined by Dr. Michelle Slater, author of an upcoming book called Starving to Heal in Siberia. Doctor, your experience.
Well, people need to know, Gordon, to avoid ticks at all costs, because a tick bite can cause these egregious diseases from Lyme, Burgdorferi, Borrelia, Ehrlichia, all of these diseases. So avoiding ticks at all costs, which is hard to do because they're tiny creatures that are unobtrusive and hard to find, and it's hard to find a tick bite. So I think that has been widely spread by now.
All right, and so you suffered for years, right, after getting Lyme disease?
I suffered for years, and I didn't know what I was suffering from because I started to experience symptoms of chronic fatigue, memory loss, some pain in my joints, and I wasn't sure where they came from. My blood work didn't reveal anything. And then I actually found a tick embedded in my shoulder, to my horror, at my home in the Berkshires back in 2011, but I did everything right. I had the tick tested and I got tested myself. I came out with a false negative, which is something that happens to a lot of Lyme patients and why so many of us end up being in this chronic Lyme stage without having had it diagnosed, when it would have been easy to treat in the acute stage. So at that point, I didn't know I should have been on antibiotics. And when a doctor found a specialist a few years later, found in my white blood cell counts that were dangerously low, and he did a more sophisticated Lyme test than the one that I'd had, and then he discovered that I had Lyme. By that stage, it was chronic. And then I went on for several years to be on almost industrial strength antibiotics, to almost no avail, because it was almost too late for antibiotics, which is what a lot of the chronic Lyme patients face if it's not detected early.
Wow. Okay. Let me reset you. We speak with Dr. Michelle Slater, author of an upcoming book called Starving to Heal in Siberia. All right. So you finally get fed up. You go to Siberia and you try this treatment in which, is this correct? You go 11 days without food and water and that solved all the issues?
So that is absolutely correct, Gordon. Although the very first time that I was there in Siberia, so I got there because I had tried everything. I had tried not only the antibiotics, but the alternative medicines, the naturopaths, the herbal remedies. Nothing was working. I was getting bedridden. And so I found this doctor in Siberia, and he trained my body like a marathon runner trains to be able to withstand the opposite of putting something into my body, but actually taking it out so that I could tolerate this process of autophagy, or self-eating, that clears out the cellular debris and disease cells in the body. So I want to give an alert to our listeners out there who have Lyme disease and suffer from it, and say, please don't try this at home by any regard. That he worked me up to a process of, first it was 7 days with no food and water and his treatment, and then it was 9 days that first time, and then on another round when I returned to Siberia, which was not for curing any diseases, but he recommends that his patients dry fast, as he calls it, on an annual basis for maintenance, from just how chemically laden our world is with pollution, chemicals, our modern diet, etc. And so after the 9-day dry fast on my first round in Siberia, I felt like I had reincarnated in my body, but as my 17-year-old self. And I never looked back. After years of struggling, I was, as I call it, I was shining and bouncing. Jeez. And everything came back to me. My memory, my ability to think, to write, my memory, and I've never looked back. So it's been 4 years of being solidly healthy when doctors kept saying, you have to get used to this new normal, that just felt very abnormal.
That's Dr. Michelle Slater, author of the book called Starving to Heal in Siberia. Also of note here, by the way, the Mayo Clinic says if you think you've been bitten and have signs and symptoms of Lyme disease like rash, fever, body aches, and or swollen lymph nodes, contact your doctor. Treatment for Lyme disease, which typically involves oral or IV antibiotics, is more effective if begun early. Coming up next, the baking industry works to keep us engaged. This is pretty sobering. Every 10 seconds, someone becomes a victim of fraud or ID theft. And even worse, 23% never recover their money. If you think it can happen to you, that's what they're counting on. But now, there's Aura. Aura is all-in-one protection from identity theft, financial fraud, malware, scam sites, and more. And Aura alerts you to fraud and threats fast, like if your online accounts or passwords were leaked, or if someone tries to open a bank account in your name. It's a new type of security service that protects all of your online information with one simple subscription. Aura is easy to set up, and all plans come with $1 million in identity theft insurance to help recover your stolen funds, and experienced U.S.-based customer support that's got your back. Right now, Aura is offering our listeners early access and 3 free months when you visit aura.com/Gordon. Go to aura.com/Gordon to get access before anyone else and 3 months for free. That's aura.com/Gordon. Thanks for being with us. During the pandemic, you may be among those who battled stress and boredom by whipping up cookies, breads, cakes, maybe brownies. Well, now, as lockdowns ease, the baking industry doesn't want to lose your interest as restaurants reopen, so it's pulling out all the stops. More from this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
So you started cooking during the pandemic. Food companies want to make sure you keep it up. More from Ellen Byron of the Wall Street Journal. Ellen, do we know how much cooking, specifically baking, increased since last spring?
Yes. We saw shelves of flour be cleared. Millions of people, new bakers, hunted online for recipes. And basically, this surge reversed years of slow sales in the baking aisle. According to a January survey by one market researcher, nearly one-third of U.S. adults said that they are baking more often this year than last year, and they plan to continue doing so.
Is it dropping off at all recently?
Yeah, it's expected this year. Sales are expected to decline 6%. These are sales of baking ingredients. They're expected to decline slightly, but that's off of a huge gain in 2020, and it's still expected to be about 17% higher than sales in 2019.
Why was baking more popular than cooking in general? Do we know?
There's a lot of fun theories about why. Okay, so first of all, the end result is sweet and delicious, and so people like that. But more than that, people reported that baking gave them a sense of relaxation and a fun activity to do with their children. A lot of people told me that the satisfaction of just precisely following ingredients, measurements, and other directions in a recipe yields usually this predictable result of doing well. And online, on social media, there's this flourishing community of support. If something goes wrong, people have fun posting that. If something goes right, of course, people love posting that. And so there has been this world of baking that has really thrived over the last year. And of course, there's so many choices. There's something for everybody if you want to bake. And maybe you don't have a sweet tooth. Bread baking surged also during the pandemic. But in general, people are able to find something that matches their skill level and their taste.
We're speaking with Ellen Byron of the Wall Street Journal. Ellen, in your story, I just love the line that cookies are the gateway category. Is that a way to hook kids?
Yeah. I mean, companies throughout the baking aisle are really excited about how not only children, but also young adults have really been drawn to baking. And of course, these companies are working very hard right now to try to hook these new bakers into a lifelong habit. But cookies seem to be the area where people are comfortable starting from scratch and following a recipe. And then what many companies reported that they saw was that the skills progressed, and they could watch that through the types of online recipes that did very well. And as the months went by, more and more sophisticated recipes became more popular.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Ellen Byron with this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. As a business owner, you eventually realize you can't do everything yourself, but hiring is complicated. And what if you only need part-time help? Belay, an innovative staffing solution, has successfully matched thousands of businesses with part-time virtual assistants, bookkeepers, and social media strategists. Belay offers you a virtual support team that can transform your workday. Let Belay help you juggle less and accomplish more. Just go to Belay, B-E-L-A-Y, solutions.com/deal. That's BelaySolutions.com/deal. Thanks for spending part of your Memorial Day weekend with us. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Coming up this half hour, how the pandemic pushed restaurant workers over the edge. Also, thinking critically about time and money. Plus, hot sellers post-pandemic. And the woman who visits Arlington on behalf of strangers. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Well, millions of workers, as you know, left the restaurant industry during the pandemic and have not come back. The industry has about 1.7 million fewer jobs filled than before the pandemic, despite posting almost 1 million job openings in March and raising pay 3.6%. That's an average of 58 cents an hour in that industry in the first 3 months of 2021. Restaurant chains and industry groups say a shortage of workers is slowing the recovery. Eli Rosenberg, labor reporter at the Washington Post, has been exploring the issue. Eli, what are you hearing?
You know, there's a wide range of reasons that people told me they had left the industry or had taken a pause from the industry, or, you know, for those people still employed by the industry, that some of them told me that they were, you know, looking for a way out. And I think, you know, the pandemic has served as just this watershed moment that caused people to sort of reevaluate the decisions they were making in their lives, and particularly at a time when, you know, the restaurant industry, and I say this as a reporter and as a former restaurant worker as well, you know, the restaurant industry, I think, brings with it often more labor issues and sort of less kind of typical job stability in terms of minimum wage and benefits, healthcare and stuff like that than other industries. I think for many people, it kind of crystallized that that wasn't the bargain they wanted to make anymore, particularly with this, you know, new added health risk that comes from working in restaurants.
Did the restaurants indicate that they were surprised that people didn't come back? I mean, you profiled this guy at the beginning of your story, Jim Conway, Pittsburgh area, you know, making $2.83 an hour, barely more than he did 40 years ago in this type of work, and he's 64 years old.
Yeah, right. So we're seeing the political debate right now about this worker shortage where all these businesses, restaurants, hotels, you know, these industries that have been really hard hit by the pandemic are trying to kind of get up and running, get back up to speed again, but are having trouble hiring people for often low-wage positions. So, you know, what we did with this story was tried to interview a bunch of people who worked in the industry or left the industry to sort of hear about their perspective. You know, we've heard the perspective from business owners and industry groups. And again, yeah, people like Jim Conway, who you reference, the minimum wage, the federal minimum wage for tipped workers has not gone up from $2.13 an hour for decades. This gentleman you're referring to is in Pennsylvania, where they've raised it slightly. But like you said, he started out making $2.13 plus tips in the 80s, and his guaranteed minimum wage from the company he worked at, an Olive Garden, has only made it up to $2.83 an hour.
Wow.
Recently, although obviously he in normal times he was making significantly more than that with tips.
Mm-hmm. With all these, is it like a million plus people who have left the industry and are not coming back? Are those jobs being filled by teenagers then, or do they not want these jobs either? Because it seems to be a struggle.
You know, I think we're still trying to figure out exactly what's going on. I think when you talk to business owners, they're saying the jobs aren't being filled. They're making do with short staff. They're for patching holes where they can, and they're sort of bracing for you know, as more and more customers come, sort of bracing for how they're going to adapt to meeting that workflow without the labor force right now. But something's going on, and it's a confluence of probably a large number of factors. But yeah, the sort of political discussion has revolved mostly around the unemployment insurance issue.
We're speaking with Eli Rosenberg, labor reporter at the Washington Post. His story is called How the Pandemic Pushed Restaurant Workers Over the Edge. Anybody guessing that this might bring some sort of wage reckoning in that industry? Or is it just not feasible based on the slim profit margins that a lot of them operate off of?
Yeah, it's a tough business. Restaurant owners will be quick to tell you that they have tighter profit margins than other industries, and that's definitely part of this. We have a business model that, whether it's right or wrong, does rely on customers sort of helping subsidize the salaries of people who work in tipped positions, and that's just how it works. And a lot of the chains that have tried to change that up in recent years have certainly struggled with it. So we do see some evidence now that wages are rising, as we would expect if there's a labor shortage. Pay has gone up for non-management restaurant and bar workers 70 cents an hour, 50 in the past 3 months. That's an increase of 5.1%. So pretty significant increase in a pretty short amount of time. You know, anecdotally, we're hearing some reports from restaurant owners who have decided that their bottom line can account for raising wages, you know, jumping up their wages from maybe a minimum of 13 to a minimum of 15, mm-hmm. and heard from a bunch of restaurant owners that have done this, that they've seen a sort of night and day difference in terms of interest in their job application.
Thanks, Eli. Eli Rosenberg, labor reporter at the Washington Post. Coming up next, making the most out of our time and money. Have you ever bought something online only to find out right afterwards you could have saved money? Sometimes you don't know. You just see that little promo code field that makes you wonder, is this the best deal I can get? Well, now you'll know, thanks to the new shopping tool called Honey. You've heard me talk about Honey before. Just start by shopping on one of your favorite sites. When you're ready to check out, the Honey button drops down. All you have to do is click Apply Coupons. If there's a working coupon, Honey finds it and your price drops. It's that easy. Honey has found coupons that save their 17 million members over $2 billion. I know, because I'm one of them. If you don't already have Honey, you could be straight up missing out on free savings. It's literally free and installs in a few seconds. And by getting it, you'll be doing yourself a solid and supporting this podcast. I'd never recommend something I don't use. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/Gordon. That's joinhoney.com/Gordon. Thanks for spending part of your holiday weekend with us. We all have limited time and limited money, right? How can we make the most of these two scarce resources? More than anything, the answer lies in getting the big picture right. Jonathan Clements at HumbleDollar.com is here with thoughts about our time and money. Jonathan, explain.
So, Gordon, our two most precious resources are time and money. Money, you know, we know it's limited, and of course our time is limited too. So the question is, how can we make the most out of these two precious resources? So in this latest article, what I did was try to set up a framework for thinking about time and thinking about money. So in thinking about money, probably the key variable, the one thing that we really need to think about is our so-called human capital, our income earning ability. And our human capital, or the lack thereof, drives many key financial decisions. For instance, our human capital is what allows us to take on debt early in our adult life because we have that paycheck, we can service those student loans, we can pay the monthly mortgage. But once we approach retirement, what we really want to do is get all those debts paid off, because upon retirement, we no longer have a paycheck, and hence we can no longer service those debts. So what human capital does for us, it really drives all these key investment decisions, decisions about insurance, decisions about how much to save, about what sort of portfolio we should have, about debt, as I just described. And once we've met all these obligations, you know, what we're really free to do is anything else with our money. Once we've dealt with these financial obligations driven by our human capital, the need to save for retirement, the need to have certain insurance and so on, whatever's left is discretionary income, and we should feel free to do with it whatever we wish.
All right. You made the point, too, that you can't obsess about this too much, at least when it comes to investing.
Yeah, when it comes to investing, a lot of people take this most precious resource, time, and devote countless hours to trying to outperform the market, trying to figure out which way interest rates are headed, which way the stock market is headed, which stocks will outperform, which cryptocurrency will outperform.
Right.
And most of the time, this is time wasted. So what I say to people is, stop obsessing about the market, stop obsessing about the direction of interest rates and stocks, and instead focus on three other areas of our financial life, areas where a little thought can have much greater rewards. And specifically what I'm talking about is, one, our other areas of financial life, things like what size house to buy, when to claim Social Security, how much debt does it make to take on, what insurance policies that we should we do we need. Second, we should think about how to get ourselves to do what we know is right. We all know we ought to eat less. We all know we ought to exercise regularly. Similarly, we all know that we should save diligently. We all know that when the stock market next crashes, you know, we should stand our ground and not panic and sell. So what we should spend time doing is thinking about how we can get these things that we know are the right things to do, but we find it hard to get ourselves to act. And then finally, we need to think about what we want out of our financial life, what will make us happy. And what I've certainly found is that the three ingredients of a happy financial life is, one, not worrying about money, just using that money to calm our financial fears, two, using money to create special times with friends and family, and three, using money so that we have the time to do stuff that's meaningful to us, whether it's hobbies, whether it's full financial independence that comes with retirement. The ability to control how we spend our daily lives is one of the key things that successful money management can deliver.
That's Jonathan Clements, founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. Coming up next, what a spike in sales of teeth whitener and condoms says about our post-pandemic plans. It's the perfect season for a powerful business upgrade with Dell Technologies Summer Sale Event. Save up to 45% on secure PCs built for business with Windows 10 Pro. You'll also find great savings on Dell servers, monitors, docks, and other accessories to help boost productivity. Plus, enjoy free shipping on everything. Do more with modern devices and Windows 10 Pro. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL for business specials during Dell's Summer Sale Event. Glad you can spend part of your weekend with us. As vaccination rates climb and restrictions on human interaction ease, shopping carts are filling up with items designed to facilitate people's re-entry into civilization instead of toilet paper and baking flour. Sarah Nassauer, reporter at the Wall Street Journal, says among the items in high demand recently, deodorant, teeth whitener, and condoms. Sarah, what's trending?
Well, last year around this time, a lot of people were rushing to stores to buy flour and disinfectant and antibacterial products. It's different now. We're getting ready to emerge from our cocoons here, and people are buying deodorant, teeth whitener, other things that show people are getting out of the house.
How about give us some of those sales numbers?
Well, it's interesting. You know, there's these funny little, to me, funny little product categories that are suddenly spiking, like at Walmart, which is the country's largest retailer, so a pretty good sample size. Alarm clock sales in April were double what they were last year. Luggage sales were up 400%. They also are seeing a spike in cosmetics, beauty, teeth whitener sales just in the last, you know, few weeks and months.
The alarm clock thing is fascinating to me. I get luggage. We're ready to go. But are you telling me like all these folks just woke up whenever or didn't use their iPhone alarm clock? Now they need an alarm clock?
Yeah, it's not 100% clear to me or, you know, Walmart exactly why alarm clock sales are going up. One guess is that people, you know, weren't necessarily always getting up at, you know, at a time, a set time, or were just sort of naturally waking up. And that worked for a lot of people over the last year. And that they don't always want to have their phones around, you know, so people do buy alarm clocks, or kids, you know, that are going back to school now. If your school is in person, this is April data. So if your school wasn't in person, your child might not have been getting up, you know, at a precise time, and now they are. And I think a lot of kids still use alarm clocks because their parents don't want them to have phones in the room.
There were a couple of references in your story, too, about hair, facial hair for men, another woman who kind of just couldn't wait to get her hair cut, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of more, you know, some people, you know, did go to get their hair cut for a whole year. And one of the people that I talked to for the story said, you know, she got her vaccine and she really booked her hair appointment for the day after she would reach full immunity, that 2-week window after getting her Pfizer shot, and was really thrilled to get it.
We're speaking with Sarah Nassauer, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. She's got a story entitled "The Great American Cleanup: Deodorant and Teeth Whitener are among the items flying off the shelves." So as you pointed out early on in our conversation, things like baking powder were hot back then, but that type of stuff is not so hot now.
Yeah, and you see the corresponding decline in sales of things like flour, toilet paper, cleaning products. Those are things that are not selling as well. Just to be clear, some of the spike in sales we're seeing for grooming products, it's not on the same scale as what we saw last year for toilet paper and other things where, you know, stores were cleared out for weeks. There is, for now, plenty of supply of those items.
How about balance here? We've seen these wild swings in product sales and declines. Do we achieve some balance again?
Well, you know, there's still out of stocks for products. Some of what is causing product shortages now, in some cases, it's big surges in demand, right? And that's what we were seeing early in the pandemic. But there's also a lot of issues right now with the global supply chain, and that is affecting so many different product categories.
Thanks, Sarah. Sarah Nassauer, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, a selfless act at Arlington National Cemetery. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy. Well, we'll finish with this. Last Memorial Day, Emily Dominich was visiting her grandfather's grave in Arlington National Cemetery when she noticed the military memorial was largely empty. The pandemic, of course, was raging then, and COVID restrictions allowed only family members to visit. Ms. Dominich then pulled out her cell phone and made an offer on Twitter. She wrote, "Does anyone have buddies buried in Arlington who they would like visited today? I would be honored to pay respects on your behalf." Ms. Dominich, who's 36, said hundreds of people had reached out with requests. She spent 6 hours sharing photos of grave sites on Twitter. Not surprisingly, The Washington Post says she will be there again Monday to do it again. Also, the Travis Mannion Foundation, a support organization for veterans and the families of fallen soldiers, heard about her efforts and coordinated several hundred volunteers through an arrangement they call the Honor Project. You can register online to have a volunteer visit a loved one's grave. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.